Today what we're going to do is we're going to talk about Jesus and Sabbath. And I want to get right into it. I don't want to do any introduction or review or anything. We're going to jump right into it, okay? And I've broken down, if you look in your notes, I've broken down what we're going to see in the passages into what we might call three separate sections. One, I'm calling Sabbath practice. Second one is Sabbath provocation. And the third one is Sabbath perfection. Although we'll find that maybe the ones in groups two and three really kind of overlap a little bit. By Sabbath practice, all I want to point out is that about half of the passages in the Gospels that speak about Sabbath are telling us that Jesus went to the Sabbath and taught, or went to the synagogue and taught on the Sabbath day. Okay, for instance, Mark 1:21, Luke 4:16. Both of those are passages in which Jesus inaugurates his ministry in the Sabbath by getting up. Particularly in the Luke passage, he gets up and he reads from Isaiah, and he says, "Today this has been fulfilled in your hearing." He reads from Isaiah 61, thank you. But there's not a whole lot to say about that except that Jesus was a good first century Jew and went to synagogue on Sabbath. That's about all those means. So Jesus' practice was to, by and large, adhere to the cultural norms of Sabbath, which were at that time obviously involved not working and specifically involved going to the synagogue, spending time in the reading of Scripture and in prayers with the community. Okay, so Jesus didn't, I guess the only application here would be that Jesus didn't like 100% buck the system here. All right, so as soon as he becomes an adult, he starts, you know, opening his carpentry shop on Sabbath just to be, you know, cantankerous or countercultural. By and large, his practice was to go with the people on Sabbath and teach in the synagogue. Now, we have several passages, and we're not going to talk about all of them. I can give them to you because they're kind of repetitive. But we have several passages in which there is a conflict with Jesus and the issue of Sabbath. And we're going to split these up into groups. The first one, group one, and I'll just, the people over here on my right can take Matthew 12, 1 to 8. Okay? Matthew 12, 1 to 8. And if you want, and your Bible probably tells you this, the parallels here are Mark 2 and Luke 6. It's the exact same story. Mark adds a single phrase that I'll mention later to his account. But by and large, they're exactly the same. Contextually, they're a little bit different, which is somewhat interesting to look at, but we don't have time to do that today. So we'll have you guys look at that section. This group over here, these two tables, can look at that section. The next one that I'm going to have us look at is Luke 13. Luke 13, and it's 10 to 17. Although, on all of these, I encourage you to look at the broader context. In fact, on the Matthew 12 one, I specifically give you a question with reference to that to look at the context, because I think it's interesting, if not determinative. This is unique to Luke. This story in Luke chapter 13 is unique to him as a Sabbath conflict, Sabbath issue, compared to the other synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And then the third one, so you guys will be Luke 13, okay? And then these two tables over here, I give you John 5. And these are all in your notes. John 5, 1, start with 1 to 18, all right? Resist the urge to read any further. Just do 1 to 18. And this one, I'll just tell you, you guys aren't necessarily going to read the other ones, but the John one is different in a couple of ways. First of all, the conflict doesn't come up right away. John is so much less narrative than the synoptics. You know, it's like a lot of talking and head games. And so in the synoptics, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it's just a story, right? And so you have this quick dialogue. Pharisees say this, Jesus says this, boom, boom. It unfolds a little bit differently in John, and it gets to similar issues, but at a kind of a deeper, more theological level, which I think is interesting. So I'll give you John 5. These are not all of them. There's another story in which Jesus heals a withered hand. This is in Matthew 12. Actually, Matthew 12, you could read a little bit further, because if you read a little further, there's two stories back to back. You could read to 14, and there's some interesting overlap on two stories back to back. In fact, you better read to 14. I'm sorry. Jesus heals another man in Luke 14 on the Sabbath, but it's a really quick interaction. It just reinforces some of the other points. And John has another Sabbath-related issue, two more, actually, in John 7. These are just, if you wanted to look these up afterwards, John 7, it's 22 to 24. It's about, Jesus says, hey, you'll circumcise on the Sabbath, which is work, so why can't I heal on the Sabbath? And it's a little bit more, because he talks about the law. I might bring that in later on. And then there's another sort of Sabbath controversy in John 9. There's a long one, the whole story. This is a man born blind, and Jesus heals him. We don't find out until about two-thirds into the story that it's Sabbath. And the issue is, it's not really about Sabbath. It's about Jesus' authority. And they're like, well, he can't be a good guy if he healed on the Sabbath, because that's breaking Sabbath. And then the other people are like, but he healed. So what do we do with that? So it's not so much a question of Sabbath as it is of Jesus' authority. So I left that one to the side. Okay? So we'll start with these three. I've given you a list of questions. I encourage you to read them at your table. You can do it silently. You can do it aloud. And then process through the questions there, understanding what is going on, and then trying to make some links to the Old Testament. And you will be doing an oral report in 15 minutes. All right. I'm sure that you could ring these oranges for a little bit more juice if I gave you time, but we'll leave them the way they are for you to suck on your way home. Let's talk through these a little bit, okay? Let's talk through these a little bit. We're going to start Matthew 12, so even if you weren't in that passage, I invite you to go there. Matthew 12, really 1 through 14. There's a 1-2 movement in this passage with two Sabbath controversies back to back. And they kind of address slightly different things. And one of them is not especially clear, I don't think. Jesus wins it, the dispute, there's no question about that. But exactly what point he's making isn't 100% clear. So group to my right here that took this one, just briefly, what are the two events that prompt conflict? The first one is what? Okay, so Jesus' disciples on the Sabbath, if the next passage is the same day, then they're on their way to synagogue. And on their way to synagogue, they just grab a handful of grain off of the top of a few stalks of grain by the side of, as they walk along a path or through the field. And the Pharisees apparently have lookouts in the field. And their complaint is that these guys have essentially worked on the Sabbath. Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath. And some interpreters take this to real extremes and say that the Pharisees were complaining because they had just harvested, and then they would have threshed because they would have rubbed the grains between their hands to get the extra chaff and everything off, and so that's a second act, right? And some, they have like multiple laws that they would have broken as they did this. So how does Jesus respond to this? What is his approach in addressing their accusation? Okay? Jesus tells a story from their Old Testament, from their Testament. And it's brilliant in one sense, because he wrong-foots them. They come forward with the accusation. Jesus says, just makes me think of that story of David when he and his men came into the tabernacle and they ate the bread that only the priests were supposed to eat. And Jesus' point, his implication is that, does that text rebuke David and his men for doing that? No. You may not remember that story, but the Pharisees certainly would have, and they would know that there is no, David and his men are not censured for doing that. They aren't executed, they aren't, right? So Jesus says, okay, you just brought up the Old Testament law that my disciples have broken for you know, taking this. How about we talk about another story where the Old Testament law got broken, but it didn't look like anybody did anything about it. So exactly what Jesus is on to here is not entirely clear. How he thinks the David story relates, I think it's as much to unsettle the Pharisees a little bit. How does he sort of round it out, though? What is his claim about himself or the Sabbath or whatever that kind of rounds out the argument? Okay? He says a couple of things. Okay? He says, something greater than the temple is here, is one of his statements. And what he's getting at there is he said, essentially, the David and his men, in eating the showbread, would have profaned the tabernacle. But he says, something greater than temple and tabernacle is here, speaking about himself. Something that transcends the sanctity of the tabernacle or the temple is there. And then he goes on to say, the Son of Man is Lord of Sabbath. And that's pretty much where the discussion ends, although I can't imagine that the guys were totally satisfied with that conclusion, right? That's a huge claim. Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. He says, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. I mean, he throws a few things at them. And it really gets at, as we'll unpack in a couple of the other passages, he's really poking at their interpretation of the law, what the core of the law is. And the core of the law is not adherence to a list of rules. It's under a Lord who administers as he sees fit, and it is geared towards mercy and not judgment. What elements of the Old Testament teaching or other things that we've seen about Sabbath do you see being either echoed or extended in this narrative about Jesus and the Sabbath? Do you hear any links to things that we already talked about?
Redemption.
Okay. That's probably muted in here, but I can see it where it says God desires mercy, not sacrifice. That the law... Maybe it doesn't say Sabbath particularly, but it could be implied. The law is geared towards redemption, towards restoration. What about Jesus' claim to be Lord of the Sabbath? Who does Sabbath belong to? God, right? This is God's Sabbath, to do with as he sees fit. And if he's okay with guys picking some grain, then he's okay with some guys picking grain. Jesus just, it's like almost every phrase that Jesus brings to his response to them ups the ante a little bit until he gets to this one. It says, well, look, at the end of the day, guys, Sabbath is mine. And again, it's pretty cryptic, but there's just a hit after hit after hit. At the very least, there's an emphasis on God's administration and ownership of the Sabbath, and hints at Sabbath and the law more broadly being geared towards not just obedience, but something richer like mercy and redemption. Second half of the story, what happened? What's the second controversy in Matthew 12:1-14? Okay? So there's somebody with a withered hand, and I love this, think about it. Their rebuke of him, their complaint would be that he breaks Sabbath because he works by healing. How does he heal? He says, stretch out your hand. Lot of work there, right? I mean, the guy does more work than Jesus does by saying, stretch out your hand. Very narrow, compressed notion of what working involves. And they bring it up. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? So they can accuse him. So they think, we'll trap him. We lost round one with that whole grain thing, but we can trap him here. How does Jesus respond to their rebuke? I mean, their question.
Well,
Before he heals the guy, what does he say to them? All right? This is kind of a fundamental way Jesus responds to these issues across the Gospels. He goes, if you had a sheep or a donkey or whatever, and it fell into a hole on the Sabbath, you'd pull it out. You'd show enough mercy to do the work to rescue an animal on the Sabbath, and this was allowed. He says, so why is it wrong for me to... The implication is, why would it be wrong for me to rescue this man's withered hand? If you would even do it for a sheep. Now maybe a sheep in a hole is more life endangered than a man with a withered hand. And the developments of the law, not actually biblical law, but the way that the scholars had taken it over the centuries, said that you could save a life on the Sabbath. Okay? You could do the work necessary to save a life. And so their rebuke here, I suppose, would be that, well, he has a withered hand and he could wait until tomorrow. In fact, there's another one of the passages where he says this. Isn't the Luke one where they say people are coming to be healed and they say, don't come to be healed on Sabbath. Get healed on a different day. Right? Get healed tomorrow. Which is just ridiculous. I mean, the more you think about it. But Jesus brings it up and says, so it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath. If you can rescue your sheep on Sabbath, then it's lawful to do good. The Pharisees had turned this into a negative law. We talked a little bit about that. And the law was don't work. Jesus tries to switch their thinking by saying, what's the positive that we do on Sabbath? And this comes back to what Amber reminded us of the link between Sabbath and redemption. What's the positive that Sabbath remembers? Rescue, redemption, restoration. And so Jesus heals the man by his word, which also makes me want to go back to Genesis 1. How did God create? He created with his word. And on the Sabbath, he blessed. On the seventh day, right? What were the words that God used on the seventh day? He didn't create that day. He blessed the Sabbath and sanctified it. And here Jesus is using his speech on a Sabbath to heal this man's hand. If you look at the context, this is somewhat interesting. If you look at the context, both before and after, did you guys get a chance to look at that and see how it even shapes the discussion just a little bit? What happens right at the end of Matthew chapter 11? What's the last words in Jesus' mouth in those two verses? Come to me and I will give you rest. I will give you Sabbath. Take my yoke upon you. Yokes are linked to work. Jesus says, I will give you rest. Yokes are linked with days 1 through 6. Right? You're an ox. Day 7 is linked with rest. Jesus pulls rest and yoke together in those two verses. And the very next thing that happens is he has a fist fight about Sabbath with the Pharisees. Jesus is talking and living and speaking in Sabbath language. I will give you rest. I will give you ultimate rest. And then the very next thing in the passage is for him to talk about bringing this withered man some rest on a Sabbath. Jesus is playing with these concepts. He's upsetting things at a pretty deep level. Now, right after that, right after the passage, Matthew gives us this. Jesus, aware that the Pharisees were chasing him down, withdrew from there, and many followed him, and he healed them all and ordered them not to make him known. This was to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah. Behold, my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved with whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he will proclaim justice to the Gentiles. He will not quarrel or cry aloud, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and a smoldering wick he will not quench, until he brings justice to victory in his name the Gentiles will hope. Nothing about Sabbath in those verses, except there's an emphasis on the fact that Jesus doesn't break the bruised reed. He doesn't snuff out the smoldering wick. we've just seen a man that's a bruised reed, right, with this withered hand. And what has Jesus done for him? He's brought him restoration and rest. He's brought him a bit of Sabbath, a bit of salvation, a bit of heaven, however you want to phrase it. And that quote, lengthy quote from Isaiah that Matthew gives us says, this is what Messiah is about. This is his agenda. Interesting. So some summary thoughts, you probably already grabbed some of them, but the Sabbath is God's to do with as he pleases. Jesus is superior to the Sabbath. In Mark, this same story has the familiar phrase, Sabbath is for, Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. That's an added thing that Mark gives to us, but we could throw it in here as well. That Sabbath is for people's good, not just for them not to work. Okay, let's move to Luke. We'll pile these up next to one another. Luke, what's the conflict? What happens? Middle table? Okay. All right. Great. So, similar, a couple of things. One, Jesus provokes this, not them. In the Matthew passage, they say, is it lawful to heal? In this case, Jesus is there teaching. He sees this woman and he takes his opportunity to bring this issue up. And as you guys talked about that, we'll condense this a little bit. She's bent over. She has this disabling spirit. There's some really telling language here about what Jesus is doing for her, what he perceives he's doing for her. How does it link at all with the Sabbath talk that we have seen so far about what Sabbath is about and for in the Old Testament? What sorts of observations did you guys make there? Sure. Great. Heavy language in this passage is about bondage, slavery. And we had talked about the fact that in Deuteronomy 5, Sabbath is talked about as a commemoration of their freedom from bondage, from slavery. The Pharisees would rather this woman stay enslaved to her spiritual and physical bondage one more day than somebody free her on Sabbath. Jesus seems to think that Sabbath is the best day to free her because the day itself is about God freeing his people from bondage. I talked a little bit with this group about there's multiple layers going on here, I think. We're told that it's a disabling spirit, which gives it a spiritual dimension to her bondage. We talked about the fact that she's bent over. And I wonder if she's bent over by the law. That is symbolic of the fact that God's people are bent over by the burden of the interpretation of a Sabbath law that says wait until tomorrow to get healed. Right? And what Jesus does in healing her is he frees her from all of those burdens, right? The burden of her spiritual bondage that bends her over, but also frees her from this debilitating interpretation of Sabbath that would keep her in her illness for one more day. I mean, Jesus is just like, look, guys, if you could heal her, why would you wait another day? Why not do it right now on the Sabbath and bring healing? Wendell.
She's right with that. She's been over a
lot. Right. And not by herself, and certainly not in the way they were interpreting it, right? I mean, we know, we'll see even today in Hebrews, even on her best efforts, the law, she wasn't going to be freed by the law. But the way that the Pharisees were interpreting it, elsewhere Jesus talks about it as a burden, right? In the Sermon on the Mount. You have taken the law and you've made it a burden that you add onto people's back. This lady symbolizes that, I think, in this story. So, We're kind of already hinting at the links here. Jesus, I think, is bringing Sabbath to this woman. Insofar as the Old Testament was, Sabbath was a celebration of God's freeing of his people. Sabbath had become for the Pharisees a new binding of God's people. And Jesus brings freedom for this woman on Sabbath. And he directly picks this fight with the Pharisees to do it. Let's leave that now and we'll move on to John. And healing with I'll summarize some things. I want to hear what you guys have to say. This is Jesus. This is the famous guy that's sitting by the pool and he can't get in when the waters move because he's crippled and all of that. And so Jesus heals him. And then it's not until like halfway into the story that we find out that it's Sabbath. And it's not Jesus that gets in trouble. The man gets in trouble because he's carrying his bed on the Sabbath. The man has not walked for how long? 38 years. He finally gets to walk, and he goes about 10 feet, and a Pharisee stops him and says, "You nasty, terrible man walking on the Sabbath." Talk about killjoy, right? He should have just hit the Pharisee with his bed and then, you know, finish his walk home. I mean, shouldn't these guys be like, "Look, it's Bob from the Pool of Bethesda. He's walking." Right? Instead, they're like, "Bob, why are you carrying your bed?" I mean, it's just, if you really think about the story, get out of the flannelgraph one and just play it through. These are small villages. These guys know everybody. Right? They know Bob hasn't walked in 38 years. And the first thing they say to him is, "Put that bed down." It's just remarkable the closed mind that these people have with their interpretation of the law. So how does it unfold? I mean, what happens next? How did that walk the rest of us through the rest of the story, just briefly, somebody from John 5? Okay? That Jesus had done this and that he was doing the work on the Sabbath. So verse 18 says this is why the Jews were seeking all the more to kill him, because not only was he breaking the Sabbath, but there's a key phrase. This is what John, this passage offers to our discussion. It's verse 17. It says this, "But Jesus answered them." And we don't get the whole context. It doesn't tell us that they asked him a question. It's again, it's compressed. So we have some moment when they are bringing this up to Jesus after the man tells them, apparently. This is Jesus' answer. "My Father is working till now, and I am working." Well, that answers it, doesn't it? That's handy. So Jesus, "Why do you do this stuff on the Sabbath? You know you're not supposed to do this, blah, 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 blah. My Father is working until now, and I am too."
He just spoke him in the eye.
Probably. How so, Francis?
Well, because he's going to be God again.
Yeah. Yeah. And they get it, right? Because the other half of that passage, other half of 18 says, not only was he breaking Sabbath, but he was even calling God his own Father, making himself equal with God. My Father's working, and I'm working. Now, here's the part that I want us to really think about, though, as this relates to Sabbath. Well, that's the question. How does this relate to Sabbath? How does Jesus' work, the Father's work that Jesus says he's doing, and I ask you to read a little bit further, and you see that the very next passage, Jesus does one of his, you know, Johannine little self-interpretative passages, where he says, "I only do what the Father tells me to do. What the Father does, I do." Okay, so this is, John does this all the time in John. Jesus is linking himself to the Father, saying, "I do what the Father tells me to do." So if you don't honor the Son, you're not honoring the Father and the whole thing. But as it pertains to Sabbath, for our study, what is Jesus' work? Okay. All right. I like where you're going. If you didn't hear Aaron, he's saying in the passage, Jesus' interpretive passage afterwards, he talks about life and death. And saying, is Jesus talking about a new Sabbath, not from bondage to Egypt, but into the freedom of the promised land, but a different move from the bondage of death to life? I like it. Do you have a further comment? Okay. There was debate amongst the Pharisees as to whether God actually rested on Sabbath, right? Even the first Sabbath, the seventh day of creation. He had to keep working to keep the universe going, was sort of the argument. If Jesus is tapping into that, he is claiming to be God. He's saying, look, God works on Sabbath to keep things going. My Father's working, I'm working. I want to drill it a little bit further than that and say that Jesus isn't just claiming to do universe maintenance. What's he doing on that Sabbath? He's doing universe restoration. He is bringing Sabbath. He's working Sabbath on the Sabbath. The burden that I was had in bringing the Old Testament through all of that was to see, especially from Deuteronomy 5, was that the Sabbath was that day of bringing God's people to fullness, tranquility, and peace and harmony in God's world. As a united people, in equality, freedom from slavery, freedom from toil and labor, and into the sort of life, the divine life that God Himself exhibited on the seventh day in Genesis. A restoration to Sabbath. This is what Jesus, I think, is claiming to be and do here. So Aaron's link to life and death is spot on. He's saying, God has been Sabbathing. He's been working Sabbath. He brought you out of bondage. That was God's Sabbath work, to bring His people into a Sabbath rest. What is Jesus claiming now? I am bringing people to Sabbath rest. And here we could link to Hebrews 3 and 4 again, right? There still remains for God's people a Sabbath rest. Strive to enter that rest. If we need a summary for the lesson, this is cryptic, I suppose, and we're going to have to conclude it, and I'll bring a couple things next week. But it's this, and this is at the end of your notes. It's not so much that Jesus works on Sabbath. Okay? Works on the Sabbath. That's what Jesus is doing in the Synoptic Gospels. He works on the Sabbath, and this niggles at people. And Jesus says, hey, doesn't it fit with Sabbath for somebody to be healed? Doesn't it, isn't that kind of what the law is all about, is restoration? I would say this, it's not so much that Jesus works on the Sabbath, but especially with the testimony of John, is that Jesus works Sabbath. Jesus works Sabbath. I'm playing with words, I know. But what is Jesus claiming to be doing in the Synoptics, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but then in this deep core link it to God the Father sort of way in John? He's saying, I'm bringing what the Sabbath was intended to be for God's people. Physical, spiritual, social, tranquility, rest, and harmony. And I think really, though they tell the story slightly different way, both the narratives of Matthew, Mark, and Luke and this story from John say essentially the same thing. That in His person and work, Jesus brings Sabbath to reality. He brings the Sabbath to reality. We'll talk next week about the way in which that sort of abolishes Sabbath. But it's not so much that it abolishes Sabbath as it is that it fulfills it. Jesus, the last line in your notes is, where there is Jesus, there is Sabbath. And then I take you back to Matthew 11, the last couple of verses. Come to me, all you who labor and are weary 6 days of the week or every day of your life, and I will give you Sabbath. I will give you peace, tranquility, healing of body and soul, healing of relationship with one another, healing of relationship with God. So it's not so much that Jesus destabilizes Sabbath. He reorients it back to its original idea in the gospel, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, by saying, look, Sabbath was about giving life. And then He really, in this deep theological way, claims to be doing God's work of bringing that reality to all people in the Gospel of John, with that claim of, my Father's been working, and I am working. I am working the Father's plan to bring rest to all of you. Questions, comments, observations, additions? You see what those passages are doing? Does it make some sense? I'll take that as somewhat of an affirmative. The later, not in the Old Testament law, the biblical Old Testament law is pretty simple in what it says you can and can't do. There's a couple places where it says something more specific, like carrying a burden. It talks about not lighting a fire. But by and large, it's don't do normal work labor, okay, is really what its intention is. So the Pharisees are probably wrong to pick on the disciples about that anyway, because they are not really harvesting. They're just grabbing a snack for heaven's sake, okay? They're just eating. So it wasn't work, provide for myself labor. Healing, later on, there were some, you know, because this is just what the scholars did with the law. They talk about things like healing, which is a little funny because how many of them had the power to heal, right? I mean, was there a lot of people healing people on the Sabbath? They had to address this problem. But what it speaks to, Francis, I think, is how negatively the Pharisees had come to interpret the law. They had come to interpret the law as a negative reality, a prohibitive reality. That is, the law is mostly about what you don't do. And if there's one overarching thing that Jesus does in his fight with the Pharisees, over, not just these, in these passages, but in others, is to say, no, the law was about God bringing his best to his people, showing them a way to live that would allow them to thrive. And Sabbath was the best of that. Thrive, not by negativity, can't work today, but by rest, rejoicing, tranquility, peace, harmony, unity, all the things that we've seen up to this point. And the Pharisees have turned this into a controlling, negative reality. And so then they have to specify all the ways not to break the law, right? I'm mindful, just and we'll end with this, I'm mindful of the fruits of the Spirit. Love, joy, peace, long, you know, whatever. What is the last thing that Paul says at the end of that phrase? Against these things, there is no law. You see, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, and all of that are all open-ended concepts. There's no limit to how much you can love and experience joy and peace and long-suffering. In God's mind, I would say the same thing would be true of Sabbath. Sabbath was a positive reality that had no limits. In fact, we look to enter into an eternal Sabbath, right? What was Sabbath for the Pharisees? All it was laws. Thou shalt not, right? Well, it may have been that. I think that there was a part of that. They certainly show that tendency to want to be in power. But I think that even for the common person, there's something about our own experiences of very specific rules that lets us feel that we're in control of our own lives, as opposed to open-ended realities. You know, we want to know exactly, well, can I do this? Can I do that? And really, that's not the way God designed his people to live and thrive, was with these controlled negative realities, but in open-ended truths. There are some boundaries, absolutely. But the boundaries are like lower limits. And we're invited to think about upper limits of, well, upper limitlessness of love, joy, peace, mercy, and so forth. We're getting at really at the nub of these issues with the law, but the time is gone, and so we're going to go into the sanctuary and talk about Melchizedek. Finally! Thank you so much for your input today. I hope it was helpful.